Good evening, everyone. This is Tom DeWeese. I'm president of the American Policy Center, and I want to welcome you to this conference call for the Property Rights Network, and that we've set that up to help local activists, bring together them with elected officials. We've got Patriot Radio all over the country, and we're working on trying to create a legal arm. So many people call me and ask for help legally, and we just haven't been able to provide that because we haven't had the legal arm to do that. And we're working on doing that. We may have an announcement on it before too long that we'll have such a thing set up. But meanwhile, our purpose is to get all of these groups, the local activists, elected officials, Patriot Radio, whatever, all working together, and we're trying to create kind of a mighty fist. When something happens, we can network, we can talk about it, we can all come together. One of the things we need to do, I mean, obviously we're focusing here on Agenda 21, Agenda 2030. Let me say right up front, lots of people keep correcting me, well, it's Agenda 2030 now. It's Agenda 21. Agenda 2030, the UN, about every 5 years or so, likes to rally their troops and get them all excited. So they change the names and they put new things in and so forth. In the 2000, there was a Millennium Summit, and they had eight goals that they wanted to accomplish. And then in 2016, they came up with Agenda 2030. Well, now they took the exact same goals from 2000 and made them the Agenda 2030. They put them in 17 goals. They're exactly the same goals. They just get more detailed. They're getting bolder in what they do. So Agenda 21, Agenda 2030, it's all the same thing. But what we need to understand, they sell this as an environmental program. This is not an environmental program. It is not. We're not in the middle of a science debate here. This is a drive for transforming the global political structure of the world. That's what it's about. When they introduced Agenda 21 at the Earth Summit in 1992, they announced it as the comprehensive blueprint for the reorganization of human society. That touches every single aspect of your life. And, the most powerful tool that they've put together that, when you're trying to transform the whole world and you don't want to really fire a shot in doing that, you don't want to start a hot war, you want people to voluntarily join you. And then you can put, the people they're trying to oppress, welcome the Trojan horse into the city. Well, the most powerful tool that they've used for that is the threat of Medalists tell me right to my face, it doesn't matter how many rights you think you have if you don't have a planet to stand on. Ooh. And so they've come up with that, and now we have as their most powerful weapon. Well, let me give you an example of what they think of the global warming climate change issue. I'm going to give you a couple of quotes here. A lady by the name of Christine Stewart, who was the former Canadian Minister of the Environment, said this: "No matter if the science of global warming is all phony, climate change provides the greatest opportunity to bring about justice and equality in the world." So it doesn't matter if it's a total lie or not, it's a tool. You also have Timothy Wirth, who's the president of the UN Foundation. He said, "We've got to ride this global warming issue. Even if the theory of global warming is wrong, we will be doing the right thing in terms of economic and environmental policy." Again, doesn't matter. This is what we're doing. In fact, Paul Watson, the co-founder of Greenpeace, said, "It doesn't matter what is true. It only matters what people believe is true." And then finally we have this. Cristina Figueres, who is the executive secretary of the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change, said, "This is the first time in the history of mankind that we are setting ourselves the task of intentionally, within a defined period of time, to change the economic development model that has been reigning for at least 150 years since the Industrial Revolution." In other words, we're going to bust through that darn free free enterprise capitalism thing, and we're using global warming as the excuse for it all. So there you have it. That is what this is about. That is what Agenda 21 is about. And you've noticed in the last 2 years how far they're willing to go to push their agenda. So now, what we're dealing with on the in your communities, on the local level, they are using local development programs powered by very huge federal grants to put it all in place. Grants from HUD, Department of Transportation, EPA. These grants come with very specific strings attached. Those grants were written by the same non-governmental organizations and foundations that wrote Agenda 21 at the UN level, and they put in their very specific strings to make sure that you are imposing these policies in your local community. Your city councilman, your county commissioners may think they just got this grant that's going to help them put some new streetlights downtown, or maybe fix some infrastructure underneath the streets that need to be done. But all of a sudden, you find a whole lot of other details that they have got. They are forcing the community to put in place. It might be controls on energy use or the kind of materials you use. It might be international building codes. Of course, you see the bike lanes and all that sort of thing. They are all part of this. And the way they're doing it is through these grant programs. If the community doesn't completely fulfill what the grant says, then you're going to find HUD and EPA, Department of Transportation, suing your city. And all of a sudden you're going to find that your local elected representatives aren't – it doesn't matter if you elected really good guys who said they were going to do the right thing. They are tied to these grants, and those federal agents are running your community. And the way they're doing it is they're eliminating national sovereignty. They're destroying private property rights. They're transforming, as I said, our system of elected government into this top-down control, and they're changing our culture. I want to share with you this quote. If you have been to your city council meeting or county commission meeting and you heard them talking about their comprehensive plan, talking about what they needed to do for the city, you might hear them talking about, well, we have to do this in order to prevent the chaotic growth. We can't just grow willy-nilly. And so we've got to put these programs in place. I want to share this quote with you and see if this doesn't sound familiar to you. According to the book where this came from, it says, the chaotic growth of cities will be replaced by a dynamic system of urban settlement. The region is formed by the economic interdependence of its development from the industrial complex to the industrial area. The region has a single system of transportation, a centralized administration, and a united system of education and research. Now, if that sounds familiar to you, you may be interested to know that this came from a book written in 1968 by an architect named Alexei Gutanov. He was a Soviet architect writing in a book entitled The Ideal Communist City. This is what Sustainable Development Agenda 21 is. And so this is what you're facing in your local communities. This is why we are bringing together this property rights network. I know I'm an activist myself, and I know how difficult it is for you to face these people down. There's massive amounts of money. There are huge numbers of non-governmental organizations that are all converged on your city hall or your county commission, and you are you. And how do you stand up to all that? And I've seen so many people get discouraged. Agenda 21 and sustainable development covers so much that it becomes very difficult to decide which direction to go in. It covers every aspect of our lives. What I've tried to do to help is spread this little bit of knowledge they don't want you to have. Sustainable Development Agenda 21 policies have a kryptonite. The kryptonite is they cannot impose these policies without destroying private property rights. So if you focus simply on private property, then you can begin to pull this together. They cannot put these policies in place. And that's what we're going to talk about tonight on ways to do that, to focus on property rights and how to organize on the local in your community. You know, and keep this in mind. We have incredible resources. I know a lot of you feel you're alone, and this is what I'm focusing on and how we can help you with that, with the network, being able to network with each other. We have these incredible resources of people who have dedicated themselves to this fight. Some of people excel in research. I say when I speak publicly, I ask people how many enjoy doing research, and a few people put up their hand and say, you're the most important people in the room because you're the ones who can find what is really happening, and then the rest of us can jump on it and do something about it. We have some incredible elected representatives in the state legislatures and our city councils or county commissions that they're fighting hard to hold the line, but many of them feel, and many are, working, unfortunately, they're outnumbered. And then we have a whole lot of fantastic Patriot radio programs that are getting this information out locally and nationally, and we can coordinate with them and get this information out. They're ready to carry that message. And we have, as I mentioned earlier, the weakest part of our movement is the legal part of it. I have so many people call me who need a lawyer to stop things, and I don't have that. I can't offer that, and I'm very frustrated by it, so I'm working to try to fix that. That's one of our weak links, so we're working on it. Working together, we could all be an effective team to make a difference, and that is what this call and ones we'll have. I hope to have these every month. I'm going to bring you some of the very best people in the country to come together on these calls who are working on that, and that's what we're going to do tonight. I have two of the best activists in this country, leaders in their areas, one from the great Northeast up in the Massachusetts area, and the other one from California. So we've got the whole country here covered with two of the very best activists we have, and they are Hal Shurtleff from Massachusetts, and his organization, Camp Constitution. He has done a fantastic job of taking a little organization and beginning to make it into a national organization. He has been there on the front lines, facing these people down, bringing out these issues, helping to organize other people, and he's going to share some of these things tonight. We're going to talk about this, and Dan Titus from California. And Dan has done some fantastic work in his area. He's created some amazing tools that help educate and direct local activists in what to do. And being from California, as I said in our notice, the People's Republic of California, he is working to help America not to be like California. And he's going to share many of these ideas tonight. So I want to start our conversation tonight with Hal Shurtleff. Hal, welcome to the call. Really appreciate you being here tonight.
And I'm glad to be here, Tom. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I'm very excited about tonight's call. I think we can really cover some things. I think with both of you guys, we've had conversations, and one of the conversations we've had is about this thing with activists that get discouraged, and I understand why. They, we fight, and we show up and do things, and so forth. Sometimes we're alone. Other times we try to do things, and then nothing happens from it. People come home and say, well, that didn't work, and trying to get people to understand they've got to stay there, they've got to stay in it and not back off, and most of all, when you have a little victory, accept it as a victory and move forward. Don't look at it and say, well, that didn't work. You and I have had this conversation. We've worked together on this, and you've experienced this. You got any ideas on that and how we keep people in the fight and how we keep
them? Yes, you're right. I know about 4 or 5 years ago, so many people were interested in this issue of Agenda 21. I think from about 2011 and 12 to about 15, I was getting calls from Republican Party groups, which would never get me the time of day, And you know, they were very excited to hear what we had to say, and then it sort of fizzled out. Could political campaigns got people sidetracked, or maybe they didn't see the full impact of Agenda 21 policies right away, or maybe, well, this, you know, this isn't that bad, I can deal with it. So, but then something like a plastic bag ban hits them. Uh-oh, this is what you were mentioning, this, so, oh, they banned the water bottle. What's this crazy road that used to be a nice two-way street now that's got these bike lanes and I don't even know how to drive on the road? Now they're seeing the fruition of it. And so now they're, so didn't you say something about that about 5-6 years ago? But yeah, I guess the good thing is the other side's the same way. You know, they go in cycles too. But we have to be in season and out of season. And we have to focus on what we think, where we can win and what's important. And I live right in Boston. And Boston is, there's one conservative member of the city council that just got sworn in January, just a few weeks ago. And when they, and if you went to the Boston, City of Boston website, they are Agenda 21 up to the eyeballs. Well, the average, but the average person who's promoting this has no idea what they're promoting. It's just climate change, sea rise, and we're on the ocean, so we're worried about sea level rising, and worry about too much population, worry about plastic bags killing whales in Indonesia, so we got to ban them here. So what I encourage people to do is, first off, see where your town is at when it comes to Agenda 20. What are they implementing? What can you demonstrate to people? Say, you know, oh, are you in meeting back in 1992? What's that got to do with my town? It's got nothing to do with it. Well, no, this is what's going on. And you explain it to them how, and you there, your opener was very excellent opening that you gave, to give the groundwork and to say, and how you beat it. And if you can't outnumber them, in some cases we can't, we can take legal issues. Now, the plastic bag ban, in my opinion, is a clear violation of Article 1, Section 8, Clause 3 of the Commerce Clause of the Constitution. So you don't need to have a majority. You have to have some legal. And that's why you're right. We do need, and we will find them. There are people that will do pro bono legal work. Where we have a lawsuit with the City of Boston on an unrelated issue. We couldn't afford that, but this group come forward and said, we'd like this case and we'd like to take it. I know there are property rights attorneys out there that would probably do things. Hey, can you imagine winning a case in Boston on the plastic bag ban? And then, you know, you'd go, that would be national news. That'd be incredible. Texas threw it out. They threw out the plastic bag ban. I think there were about 12 to 15 towns and cities that had implemented it. And some local vendors got together and they fought it. They'd say, we're not going to win in this particular liberal town of Austin, city of Austin. But we have a law on our side, and that they were able to have it was beaten back by a state law, not a federal law. So that's one of the things that we can do. And so I encourage you, look and see how far it's been. And I know we talked about this a few years ago in the town of Ringe, New Hampshire, how I went into the town. That's where our summer camp used to meet. And there was this master, the charrette was on the town hall. I was actually leaving information off on the subject to the three selectmen, and then I saw this thing called a charrette, which is, you know, a visionary session, and I wrote a letter to the editor. And as a result of that letter, some local people in town got a hold of me, and I got some lefties got really nasty. And when they're getting nasty, you know you've made an
impact.
You're
over the target.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, there's an old Southern expression, when you throw a rock at a pack of hogs, the one that squeals is the one that you hit, you know? So that's what happened. And within no time, they organized it. You can't just be one or two people. You got to get more people involved. They held a meeting. They had 200-plus people in a cold day in February, and they strategized. And they had in their town election, which is always in March. It's off-season in March, you know, every odd year. They put some things on, they call them warrant articles, like referendum questions. And they were beaten back, like a 4-to-1 margin. Including any money coming in from HUD has to be voted on in the general election.
That's something I wanted to mention, or have you mentioned, because that is revolutionary of what they what they did to make sure the grants are the danger, and they're the poison that are spreading this across the country, and the key is not taking the grants. Explain that a little bit more about what they did with the grants in Ringe.
Well, what happened was HUD was they just were just making inroads. had already created a smart growth. I mean, it was on the books, I mean, on the drawing board. But they had a smart growth area, and they had some housing they were going to build, and Section 8 housing, of course, and there was a college in town, and that was going to be the smart growth area to the college, and have some nice little coffee shops. And this is a rural area, and there is a downtown, and it has a library. There are no real retail units in, but they wanted to change all that. And so there was initial money by HUD gave the town, I don't know, some small amount of $30,000 to start their planning stage, and they had the charrette. And there's statewide groups. In fact, HUD also operates through these regional planning commissions. And they create in New Hampshire, they created something called Granite State Future, which was a kind of a that worked with all the regional planning commissions. And what we exposed that, these folks left with their tails, you know, running out of town. Even the town manager resigned. And in its place left a local organization called Save Our Town. And that's what we have to do in other communities. And even in Boston, this plastic bag ban, which was just implemented on December 14th. So we have great resources out. Most cities have weekly newspapers. Every community has a weekly newspaper, and they're looking for copy. So I wrote when I have a list of why the plastic bag, I mentioned Agenda 21, but I put the reasons why. And the information, there's so much good information out there between your website, American Policy Center, the Heartland Institute, and others. So I put together this letter, and I had to be a little humorous. I said I'm surprised they didn't do it on December, the ban went into effect December 14th. I said I'm surprised they didn't wait to December 16th to add insult to injury. That's the Boston Tea Party anniversary. just to show how much. That letter was published, and one particular newspaper got a hold of me. The owner, he said, I want to run it as an article, and he put it on the. It was a front page story, you know, and that got some. And I always have what I call an altar call in my letters. For more information, please call me. And if you don't like to put your name on, if you don't want to put your personal contact, you can refer to the American Policy Center. And in fact, I did. And the letters make reference to the American Policy Center. Here's a website. Here's a Facebook page. That's where you're going to get the information. So there's some place for people to go with this, where they know other like-minded people can work together. So as a result of contacting my friend Willie Soon, he got some people in the Climate Realist Committee.
Willie Soon, by the way, is one of the premier scientists in the country who is working hard to debunk the lies of global warming, and he has taken a huge hit in his academic world and so forth because of his stand on that. He's a courageous man, but he's done fantastic work exposing this. I remember the title of one of his articles at the very beginning was, "It's the Sun, Stupid."
He's one of our instructors at Camp Constitution. Yeah. We'll teach me, let's say, we love Willie, but can you believe he thinks the sun has something to do with the weather and the hot weather?
The heat, yeah.
How crazy is that, right?
Yeah.
But anyway, Willie was able to get some people in the Hartman Institute ran it as an article, CFACT. And these are guys, CFACT, CFACT.org is another great resource. And then there's What's Up With That, Anthony Watt, the weatherman who went all over the country with the teams of checking these land-based weather stations and finding like 80-85% of these stations were compromised, which is another term he used, but meaning that they weren't set up right and the readings would give you higher temperatures and so forth. And they ran it. So it was just one little newspaper. And then you post up on Facebook pages. You go right to the City of Boston's Facebook page. Go right to that city councilor's Facebook page or that town manager's Facebook page and copy and paste. That's what I did with the letter I sent out to Ringe. I put it on the Town of Ringe Facebook page and just sit back and watch all the lefties go nuts. You talk about paranoid. They like to call us paranoid conspiracy theorists. Just a little bit of exposure gets them really angry.
Yeah. Well, this is the key. This is the key to it,
yeah.
Because they cannot stand that light. And and what people need to understand is that your town, I don't care what size it is, even small towns will have 15, 16, 17 of these NGO groups all have their own agenda. and they know they're the ones that apply for the grants. They stand behind your city councilman, your county commissioners, and if one person comes in like you and says something like this, they're behind him going, the guy's nuts, pay no attention to him.
Right.
This is why you get shut off a lot from them. But that's why, as you said earlier, we cannot go in there alone. You need to have other people with you to, attack these things.
That because it's just one crank, one letter, busybody
exactly.
crank.
Yeah.
But if you don't need to have overwhelming number, it's just enough.
Yeah.
So, hey, I had a guy that owns 6 restaurants in the city. He's interested in helping out. So he's feeling the pinch, So you need a few of these folks, and then maybe they'll start listening and they'll realize, hey, maybe we've gone overboard or something,
Yeah, and that's one thing, Hal, what you're saying there is, the guy who owns the store who's feeling the pinch, that's key to this. You're talking about the bag issue, but let's take it, let's say they're doing some kind of smart growth program in town, and a neighborhood is targeted for whatever's going to happen. The bulldozers are going to run there, or whatever's going to be done. And one of the ways to grow your movement is go in that neighborhood and say, you know what they're about
that's
to do
right.
to you? So,
well, that's what we did. There was a Dorchester's section of Boston, and parts of Dorchester are probably black and Hispanic. But there was a pastor of a church. 30 years ago, there was a three-family crack house and a storefront that was abandoned. And the city took the property over, tore it down, and he said to the pastor, look, you'll be the unofficial guardian of this parking lot. They used gravel. They didn't even pave it with concrete or tar or anything, asphalt. And today, it was 2 years ago, the city had planned to sell it to a private developer for $5 million, something you couldn't give away, and they were going to bring in this cluster housing. So they invited me to their little save the parking lot, but I was able to explain to them, this is what's really behind it. Yes, they're going to, gentrify it. The property rates will go up. The people, low, middle income, will be moving out. And I said, oh, by the way, you see this lane? There's a bike lane right on the – I said, they want to – you guys will move to Brockton, and the wealthy whites will come in, and they're right just 2 miles down the road is downtown Boston. So it really resonated with them. So whether it's the rural areas or the urban areas, go out there and make friends with people. And don't be afraid – you don't have to be a walking encyclopedia on Agenda 21. I was at this event a little while ago, and this lady introduced me as an expert. And I said, I don't really want to be an expert. In the land of the blind, the one-eyed man's king, But, all you have to do is watch a couple of Tom DeWeese videos, and you probably get your stuff done pretty good,
Well, and again, when you go in there, and you begin to confront them. They're not used to being confronted.
No.
But how would you respond to, I know you've had to deal with this, where, first of all, one of the things we hear all the time is, you mentioned Agenda 21, that's been debunked. The one I've heard most recently is somebody was bringing up these policies, and one of the county commissioners kind of pounded on the desk and said, this is what's trending. Doesn't matter. Don't ever think, facts or anything. This is what's trending, or it's
right.
been debunked. How do you respond to that when you're standing in front of them?
Well, what I tell them is that they simply rebranded something. I said Agenda 21, and they'll say, oh, that was nothing more than a homophobic meeting, and it was just great suggestions. I said, that makes it more dangerous because it was soft law. And then you have ideologues behind the soft law, and then they go home to their states, their counties, their towns, and they introduce it. In fact, when I wrote a rebuttal letter just yesterday, I made reference to a G. Gary Lawrence. Now, he was a man that worked for the Clinton administration, the White House Office of Sustainable Development, which I don't think exists anymore once they created that document towards a sustainable America. And he's over in London, and he's talking about when people get in our way, he said, we're going to bring out the people who are concerned about a one-world government. He said, so we have to change the language to make it sound a little more appealing. We'll call it smart growth or sustainable development. They're changing the terms all the time. And I think the American Planning Association did something similar about 6 or 7 years ago. They said, well, we they had a meeting. And he said, "This is how we overcome the opposition."
Yeah, they put out, they call it a glossary for the people. And here's
it.
The words.
Yeah.
Don't say these words because it makes
right.
these people see red. And,
right.
and I have joked many times that eventually they keep bringing out new words, and we're going to keep telling people what those words mean. They're going to have to start doing their presentations in sign language because they won't have any words left. But that's how devious these people are. They will lie, cheat, and steal to put this thing in place.
And the other thing, too, is you have to maintain this. It's hard to keep a sense of humor. Now, like I said, this local guy is trying to drum opposition to me. I'm the bad guy here. So I'm calling him Commander Wright of the Committee for the Defense of the Revolution. You know, they get really like I'm just being serious. To me. They're not like they are in Cuba right now, but that's what they are. So I'm trying to make them put them on the let them be on the defensive for a change.
I think it's a great tactic. You use the humor, and you really put them on the defensive with that. They don't know how to deal with that because we're always so serious. And
well,
if
one
you can
guy,
put humor in it. Yeah.
This guy said, "Well, you're right wing sources, the Hartman Institute. They're right wing." I said, "And what are your?" I said, "Let me guess." I said, "Leather Jones and the Nation." Yeah. That's legitimate. And then they play the money. It's always the Koch brothers, right? And I don't think the Koch brothers are as far right as they claim that some claim to be. The Heartland Institute, they have their little frequently asked questions. The Koch brothers gave them $25,000 in 2020 to fight Obamacare. They haven't given them a dime since. And they'll will say, "Oh, the Koch brothers," you know, they're behind it. And I say, "Hey, the Koch brothers are behind open borders, so they get more in common with you." You know, then they've lost that. You know, or they'll say that big oil, you're behind big plastic bag, a part of the plastic bag lobby. You know, I wouldn't mind getting a little money from some of these people, by the way.
I've always said that, you know. I was accused of being funded by Exxon, and I actually wrote a letter to the chairman of the board of Exxon and said, "I'm taking your heat. Where's my check?" And didn't even respond to me. I was so important to them.
I just submit my car payments or something like that, my health plan bill. I won't even ask for a donation. I just say, "Just pay my bills. I'll be happy."
But so anyway, you're an activist on the local level, trying to do some research and figure out what's going on. One of the things I will tell people is find out what in that plan really upsets you anyway. You look at that community plan,
mm-hmm.
what is it that bothers you? And focus on that. That'll make it stronger for you to go after.
Well,
is it an attack on property rights or whatever? Go ahead.
I did a few. I traveled throughout the region, New England, New York, over the years, Midwest, not as much as I used to. I'll go right to those town halls, city halls with my little video camera. Now you have live Facebook feed. And just say, "Hey, this is evidence that dinner call you want in your town." And just here are the posters. Here are some. In Massachusetts, we have what they call Massachusetts Green Communities. And you go to a town, and there'd be this oversized check on a podium or, on an intro. That they join green communities and they're being bribed with the taxpayers' money. And even little things, the plastic bag ban here in Boston, right? But the newspaper bags, the Boston Globe, that far left, I call it a far left rag. And so I did take a walk in my neighborhood and I'm saying, "Hey, well, I as much as I detest a newspaper, they have a right to use these plastic bags, but they're discriminating because the bags that they're banning are handles. These are handleless bags. And they're all over the neighborhood. Every week the Globe hits every house in the community, and a lot of these bags are tossed in the street. So, if you're going to be consistent with your Marxism, you need to ban these bags." Kind of put them on this. Well, why are these exempt?
Yeah.
The guy who owns the Globe owns the Red Sox. So what's going on here? And it gets people thinking. You see, those bags. What's going on? Why do they ban this bag but not that bag?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, I can see how what really your strength here is really getting that publicity out and putting it right in their face and covering those local communities and little newspapers and that sort of thing and using social media. That's what you're doing.
Right to the face. The city councilor that represents my district, he won't respond to me, so I said in a letter that I said my city council has cut off diplomatic relations with me. Like I say, it puts him on the spot.
Don't you think that when you let the opposition know you exist, and maybe there's an organized effort. Maybe you've got, you know, you only need 15 or 20 dedicated people really be a force in this. Don't you think that gives them pause? And even if you haven't won some major battles over them, but they know you're out there, and they work more cautiously and slowly.
Well,
would you agree?
Yeah, I agree completely. In fact, Keene, New Hampshire is an example. Keene is a college town in the southwest part of New Hampshire, not too far from Reims, about 20 miles away. A member of ICLEI, one of the only three or four communities of ICLEI. But even there was pushback. They had a bill or an ordinance about vernal pools, and they didn't want to, and of course, whatever they define, it's whatever they call it. You know, vernal pool means something, but it means something else somewhere else, you know. So they wanted to say, if you have a property with a vernal pool, you can't do no use up to 200 feet. So they end up getting it up to 50, down to 50 feet. It was still not good, and it was a very, it passed by one vote. So because we had some local activists in Keene and some of our efforts around the area, so they were on the spot, you know. So they said, okay, well, this 200 feet's a lot. That means 200 feet, a radius of 200 feet. That's a whole lot of land. So to us, even though the bill passed, it wasn't as bad as it could be. So it was a minor victory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, this is key. Victories are victories. I don't care how small it is. And if you watch what the left does, they do that. In the beginning, we had, basically, if you want to put it this way, our side, if you constitutionalists, you're on George Washington's side and so forth, we had 100%. And these guys, the environmentalists and so forth, started wanting to compromise. We only want 5%. We only want 5%. Well, now we had 95%. Now we had 75%. Now it's, what do we got, about 30% if we're lucky?
Now we're on the outside looking in.
Yeah, and they never stop. Once they get that little piece, then they come back for more. And we've got to be aware of that.
And their goal is multi-generational. We may not win this whole battle in our lifetimes, but we're setting the groundwork so my son can win the battle, or his great. But we're going to, and meanwhile, we're stopping it little by little, preventing it to be much worse. So that's really, I think, we need to look at it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's I think this is key. That, as I said in the beginning, that so many people, I find them looking down, going, we've lost the republic, we can't win. They're looking down in defeat. So many times I've heard people say, look at all the gray hair in this room. There's nobody, young here working on this. A call I'm going to have soon, a few months from now, I'm going to have all young people. Because you mentioned CFACT. CFACT does a fantastic job of getting young people involved, and I'm going to have some of their people and some other folks in too, and so that ought to be an interesting conversation. But this is key, that we keep our head up, that we don't look down in defeat. We take small victories for what they are and build on them.
That's right.
So, well, Hal,
let me just mention we have some great resources. CampConstitution.net's the website. We just created a flyer to be used to ban the bag. Don't ban the bag, bag the ban. It's a download. If you go to our website where it says download, scroll down, you can print it out. We have some great YouTube videos, including a Tom DeWeese playlist. I think 7 or 8, a couple of your classes and some of the interviews we did over the last 4 or 5 years. I think the one I did with you when I first met you at the Heartlands Conference in New York City, we were talking about the Law of the Sea Treaty, I think. I think it might be on there, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Been around a long time, and are you feeling that finally, after all these years, I know you've gone through the same as I have of not being listened to or being called everything there is, finally beginning to feel a change taking place. This is our time. This is the moment we've been waiting for. Do you feel that way?
Yes. I'm an optimist. I'm not a Pollyanna. But yes, when an owner of a newspaper in a Democrat city calls me up and says, I'm going to run your letter as an article, mm-hmm. and because he said, I never heard these facts before. I never knew this.
There you go.
So, yeah, I think these are good signs.
Yeah. We're going to, begin to put more materials together. My whole focus is on activists, on giving them what they need to be able to move forward. I know we're having some of your things and some of Dan's things and stuff. We're going to put these together. It's funny because after I put out so many articles for so many years, people would say, finally they started saying to me, okay, I get it. What do I do about it? And I jokingly said, gee, I don't know. I never got that far before. But that's become the focus since then
What I would recommend is that some of the stuff that's national can be localized. In fact, like I have been creating these flyers about getting green community out of your town, and whatever town it is, you use the same flyer that we're talking about. Just put down Boston, Arlington, Cambridge, whatever. Instead of, I'd say, okay, now here's something you can use. Print 1,000 of these out and put them in the neighborhood of your city councilors. If only a few of you, you don't have much of a budget. They think the whole city's been saturated because you just hit a few. We used to do that in some towns in Maine. It was so much fun because they would have their meetings and say, oh, did you get one of these? Those people, they're all over the place. Oh,
that's a great tactic, as you say. It makes them think that the world is coming down on their heads. Give your websites and anything else that you want to have people contact, anything like that.
Yeah, campconstitution.net and our Facebook page. In fact, I'm doing a presentation on behalf of the APC in Rutland, Vermont, next on the Friday. I'm sorry, it's going to be Monday, the February 11th, at the Rutland Area Christian School. So that's going to, if you have friends who live in the greater Rutland area, let them know about it. The notice is on our Facebook page, and you have a Facebook page, Tom. I think I'll put the notice there too. So
I've got two on there. Yes.
Yeah. I'll create an event there too, so people can, people who are in your orbit will hopefully see it and let other people know about it.
Yeah. All right. Well, great, Hal. Hang on, and we're going to go with Dan, and then we'll go to question and answer. We've made our presentations, and so people can ask you guys questions directly. Maybe I hope you spark some interest in some folks and can help mentor some people and, get people moving forward.
Excellent.
All right. Thank you. All right. Dan Titus, are you with me?
I'm here.
Oh, great.
Good evening, everybody.
Dan, as I said earlier, Dan is a very, very effective leader in California. Has had some incredible results and things that he's done, and you really, really do a lot of getting right down there in the city councils and the county commissions and right in front of them, don't you? You do work like that.
Well, I we all try our different ways of doing things. I've done some things that were dismal failures, and then I hit on an action plan, and with that in mind, what happened over here is in California, and Arnold Schwarzenegger, Mr. Rhino himself, passed two global warming initiatives. One was called the Global Warming Solutions Act of 2006, which basically regulates air. The other one was a bill which regulates transportation and all housing. Now, you mentioned Agenda 21 and Agenda 2030. Or sustainable development. The goal of that is reparations or redistribution of wealth. Everything else is just noise and an excuse to get to that. So with that in mind, what I did is I do consulting, business consulting, and the thing that I do is I set up independent restaurants and fast food places. And in order to do that, you have to write a thing called a business plan. So I've been doing that for the last 25 years very successfully. And I thought to myself, really what we need is citizens action committees. We need people in different cities, and they can share resources and so on and so forth. So I turned 90 degrees. I set up this idea of set up a citizens action committee. And, a committee could be two people, two or more people. And the idea was, hey, let's get them, read. Most important thing I can say, go to your city's website, go to the council agenda, print it out and start looking at it and discussing it with your friends, because all the buzzwords and everything they're going to do at the local level is in those documents. So I thought, well, gee, what we can do is if we set up action committees, you could go to your local Republican clubs and things like that and have them set up a committee on different issues and so on and so forth. But anyway, what I do is not so much the activism. I do the research, and I'm the suit and tie guy. And one reason I set that up is because I to avoid blunt force trauma. So I critiqued the two global warming bills as part of this Citizens Action Committee. And again, the issue that I landed on of all issues, sustainable development, the global takeover and taking capitalism into socialism, globalism. So anyway, so what I started to do was critiquing these bills. And it was mainly so that I could understand them. So I took the two global warming bills, I printed them out, and then I put anything that was salient that bounced off the page and I highlighted, I put it in the margins. So if anybody wanted to get up to speed on the bill, they could just read the margins and be up to speed on it, basically. So one of the things in the global warming bill from 2006, it said, low to moderate income housing will be built within 2 miles of the coastal zone. That jumped off to my page because I had heard about this thing, the three E's of sustainability. And basically, it's just social justice. And we've had the Southern California Association of Governments over here, which is the largest metropolitan planning association in the country. They have all this stuff goes through them. And the local COGS, which is the Council of Governments. Now, in studying a lot of this stuff, Tom, you mentioned the grants. The grants are one thing, but we found out 2/3 of this stuff is voluntary, even if they get the grant money.
Is that
this
right?
This stuff is completely, totally, flat-out illegal. It's unconstitutional, but they use the visioning, they use the charrettes, they use all the environmental groups as their trained seals, as I call them. And like for over here, you folks ever heard of a climate action plan?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Climate action plans are to regulate GHG reduction, okay, greenhouse gas.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started, we had a big success back in 2012 in a city called Aliso Viejo, where Mike Mungzing, he was a new constitutionalist. He got onto the city council, and they had a climate action plan, and he didn't know what to do, so he put the climate action plan on a Facebook page and asked for help. Well, I work with a lot of the local activists, Debbie Bassicalupi, who now works with CFACT and New American, and Heather Gass, and a number of Mike Shaw, you might remember him.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, he put this climate action plan up on a Friday. And on Monday morning, he had 244 questions for staff.
Whoa.
And here's what happened. So he started to dribble the questions out to the city manager and staff, and they started to sandbag. You know why they sandbagged? They couldn't answer one of the questions.
Mm-hmm. That's what we find. Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I have on my website, iAgenda21.com, I just redid the thing. And you can find examples of climate action plans in there, and they'll have their lingo in there, and then you'll have the questions, and you can see how methodically go through these things. So getting back to Aliso Viejo.
What was the website, agenda21.com?
agenda21.com.
iagenda21.com. Okay, good.
Right. And, you know, all that really is just placeholders for all the work we've done locally and some articles and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But over time, you can see the breadth of the work. I mean, it's there. So getting back to what, you know, at the top of this conversation, what I do, you know, I hate PDFs. So I've been a publisher for 25 years, and I put together a report called UN Agenda 21 Sustainable Development. I stuck it on Amazon, and I sold thousands of copies of this thing.
Mm.
And it was just the two global warming bills. So then I met Mary Baker, who run Citizen Ninja, great activist training outfit. And this is way before. This is way back. This is in 2012, I think. I met her. It was like a Saturday morning, and I didn't want to go to this thing, but something pushed me to go. And
I've
I got
been there.
There. I got there. I had a case of books, and I go, look, I just redid my book here, and it's called UN Agenda 21 Sustainable Development in California, and I got mobbed. So when I met Mary, she works with the famous demographer Wendell Cox, and they had put together an alternative for planners at the cities called Dimensions of Sustainability. And they took it to the California League conference here in L.A., and mayors and planners were coming up to the table, and they'd pick up the book and say Dimensions of Sustainability, and just thinking that it was going to be generic to what they do. And you know what they said? Oh, this is the other side of the argument. I've never heard that argument before. This is interesting.
There you go. Yeah.
So I took that, and I updated the publication for California, and I got a hold of John Anthony. I think you helped with his video, Tom.
Sustainable Freedom Lab, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Karen Bracken. And so I kind of tracked these folks down, and like you, I've never met you folks, but we're kindred spirits. Mm-hmm. So what I did is I took their information and I updated the publication and, again, put it on Amazon. And by then, and Hal nailed it. Things were hot and heavy a few years ago, and then it kind of died out. I think that is because the globalists in both parties have been given their marching orders. Over here, the Republicans are the worst on this stuff. Not so much, I mean, in California, we're one-party paid. State. We're a lump of cold democracy, our tyranny of the many. And you know, you talked about optimism. It's a tough go for me because I'm working on a program now called America Don't Be Like California, and it's really kind of like, let's warn the rest of the nation and the world because we're pretty much done over here. They're going to do this stuff.
Well, talk about
we
that.
Have a bill. Yeah.
Talk about your program there, because what you're saying here is California has just been suckered into every single bit of the stuff we've been warning about for over 20 years, and now you're living under it, and very soon you're going to have your own wind turbine in your front yard and you know, all that, and people,
well,
you know, when it gets to that point, how do you turn it around? It's why now we have to move forward and stop this now before the rest of us are
well,
like California.
You know, guys, I hate to say it, but the only way California, you know, is going to get turned around is when the millennials and Generation Z or whatever's behind them, when the next crash comes and it hurts, and all the work that we've done will be there for them. Because a new phoenix will rise in California, I don't know when, but this is mind-boggling. They passed the bill to be 100% net zero, meaning no fossil fuels used for energy production or energy in California by 2040. And we know the ruse is they always back that up, because we were on track to beat our 2020 GHG reduction goals here, and they doubled down with Agenda 2030 goals. See, with the left, everything's relative. So even if you meet the goals, they're going to take it down. So they said net zero, meaning there will be no coal, gas, powered plants in California. And now Southern California Edison, in Southern California, they're going to go to time-of-day pricing, which in the evening, since they're not going to, you know, there will be no energy production in the evening. And when they pass this thing, I watched the two-hour presentations by the Democrats in Sacramento. They said, you know, we don't have energy storage and battery storage, but, you know, we think it's going to come along in the future, so we're going to pass this thing anyway. So now they got rid of the nuclear power, and now they're getting rid of all the gas-powered plants, which are peaker plants. What's that mean?
Does that mean, Dan, that when all this stuff is imposed and you don't have the storage facility and all that for power, that come nighttime, you're going to have rules that, you know, stores have to be closed, the elevator in your high-rise isn't going to work, all that kind of thing. Is that pretty much the future?
That's what's coming, but they don't deal. They don't think about that. So when these power plants were built in the early 2000s, and I can't remember what the life of a plant is, but they barely used them. They mothballed half of them 10 years ago. And theoretically, now they're saying we have to have time of day pricing in the evening, to where if you need to use your lights, you're going to pay through the nose.
Mm-hmm.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. This is why we have worked so hard to stop this. Top-down control, as you said, redistribution of wealth is the whole point of it. It is a dictatorship. It is a socialist mess. And you know, this is, and there are so many people who have bought into this climate change scare tactic that, well, you know, as the Greens have said to me, as I said earlier, it doesn't matter how many rights you think you have, you don't have a planet to stand on, and that has got what has given them so much tread is to move forward. The scare tactic. The scare tactic itself, as Hal was pointing out with Willie Soon, is a total lie, and yet, you know, people are believing that, and that's why they'll start getting the camel under, you know, its nose under the tent a little bit. Well, we just need to control this. We just need to do that. And, you know, facing your city councilmen, your county commissioners who are buying into that, they are surrounded by these NGOs who don't aren't going to let up on them for an instant. They begin to believe this is a proper role of government, and then you come in, Hal comes in, I come in, you people are just nuts. And, you know, this is where, you know, we've got to make the connection and find a way to show them we're not nuts.
One thing that I joined in the Republican, I've been a Republican when Ron Paul got involved. I'd been a Republican early on, way back 40 years ago or whatever, and then I didn't really pay attention to that. You know, that's another thing that's, you know, they've taken civic responsibility. They don't teach it anymore. I mean, everybody says, well, how do I fight this stuff? Well, you've got it. Like, again, go to your city council, start there, read the agenda. Find your local transportation commission, read their agendas. They publish. The thing is, they're telling you exactly what they're going to do. They're holding an onion in front of your face and saying it's an apple. and we just have to go in. And
Here's a question. Mm-hmm. In that line, I'm asked this question all the time. Maybe you are too. How do I know Agenda 21's in my community? In other words, you mentioned buzzwords earlier. What buzzwords can you know?
That's important. But one thing, you know, if they're going to couch this thing around climate change, you have to ask, well, what is that? Mm-hmm. And then you get a blank stare because they don't know what it is. And I don't know if you're familiar with Mike Murphy's "What in the World is Spraying." They literally can manage the weather now. I mean, it's no big deal. These are things
and
called
actually admitting
in California.
That, yeah.
Now, here's what I just said, look, we can argue about whether it's climate change. If that means there's global warming and we're going to be a few degrees hotter or something, we can argue about that. But my background is electronic engineering, and I got to tell you right now, you're not going to be able to measure the sine wave with a noise floor that's much higher than the sine wave. And that's called noise. In the atmosphere, they're polluting the atmosphere with heavy metals right now for a number of different reasons. I won't get into it. But we would never know if there's global warming. That on top of the lies that the UN IPCC does. I've successfully argued over here, if you look how they measure GHG in tonnage, the actual carbon, there's a tiny little footprint. It says, based on IPCC models. And I go, well, you can't use that stuff. Those guys are they're fraudulent. Remember the Climate Gate scam of 2012? And then in the summer of 2015, going into the meetings for Paris, they lied again. Mm-hmm. And I've got publications on all this stuff. It's free to download at iagenda21.com. And that's how you argue this stuff. And I argue all my cases on government documents.
Well, that what they'll do.
Very important.
What I find, you know, especially, you know, okay, we can make the case about global warming and argue that and that level, but when they disconnect from that, and they and you get the American Planning Association, these kind of groups that are just focusing on, well, we've got to make sure that we prepare the community for the future, that chaotic growth I was mentioning earlier. You know, that we just got to make sure that we're doing things properly that way. And so they, you know, they make you think, well, these are all local programs, and it's just to make sure we're ready for the future for new technologies and new ways of doing things and overcrowding and all that sort of thing. And
no,
so that's all this is. It's not that stuff you're talking about.
Stan Kurtz wrote the book Spreading the Wealth. He nailed it. This is all about flipping red areas to blue. That's what it's all about. So over here in, by Disneyland, so everybody gets greased. The Republicans get greased on these high-density developments and so on. There's waivers and kickbacks and everything you need as far as a developer. So normally, naturally you're going to buy into this global warming stuff. There is such a huge excess capacity of apartments right now. It's insane. And I said, well, I just wonder when, you know, when are they going to start, you know, giving this away as stipends? Well, last year, Denver had such a huge amount of vacant apartments, they started giving to union employees and teachers and stuff, reductions in their rent.
Yeah.
This is all about buying votes.
That's
really
what
it is.
And, you know, that's so interesting because I've got a report right here in front of me where the Speaker of the House of the Oregon Legislature is moving to get rid of zoning that protects single-family homes, claiming there is a housing crisis and we don't have a choice to let people have their single-family homes and their yards and so forth because we have a housing shortage and we need to use that property for multiple housing, apartment buildings, and so forth. And, you know, this is the kind of way that they throw out these scare tactics. And they make up. I've been on the stage with people who have made up a statistic at that moment just to foil me. You know? This is what they'll do. And
here's a prime example. All right, so they open the borders. Why? For votes, period.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Using the California example. A lot of this housing is subsidized housing for the people coming across the border, H-1B visa holders, and refugee programs. So they ram them in here, and once you're on the dole, how do you vote? You know, you come from a socialist country, you know, water shortages and things are normal, and it's like, you know, it's no big deal. We just came out of a drought. Now, in Stern San Bernardino, we have an aquifer here with a 10-year supply of water, but yet we're still in a drought. So they passed the bill last year, and I can't believe people they're just oblivious to this. You're going to have a government employee knock on the door and say, how many people live in your house? Three? Okay, you get 55 gallons per capita per person per day. Oh, and you live on a half-acre equestrian property? Oh, we're going to photogrammetry your property with a satellite to allot you your ration of water. That's here. It's law in California now.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
this is all
about moving us into the proverbial new world order. I mean, it's just look at the finding NAFTA again. It just goes on and on.
Yeah. By the way, back in around 2000 or so, the UN had a meeting in I think it was in San Francisco with mayors from all over the country. And they were setting up these programs for community development. And one of the big things they were talking about was what you just said about the water control and only having so much water available every day. You know, and the mayors were signing on to this, and if they had three or four goals they had to approach, and if they achieved all three or four of those goals, then they got a plaque of this color, and you know they got a sign at the beginning of the community at the city limits that this is this kind of community and all that, you know, and they get them all into this, and this is what they hear everywhere they go. These kinds of programs are being promoted to where they begin to believe this is the proper role of government. And now you're living with it.
Yeah, well, you know, we just had an election, so we have a few newbies. And we need to get to those guys and say, look, you're going to be approached by, you name it, association, and they're going to train you on how to be a councilman or whatever, you know, position they have. It's a perfect time to approach these people, because if we do that right off the cuff after an election, they're going to go, oh, I guess this is the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
But exactly. Generally, we don't do anything, and then they get hit by all the special interests.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But No,
go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, you know, I mean, there's no magic bullet. There's no panacea. Stand up and speech. When you do a speech or something, do it on facts. Whenever you go to a city council meeting and they give you the lousy 3 minutes, pass out in advance to the city clerk your speech or your letter, and so it's on public record. And over time, that public record builds. So whenever I go in with a publication, I give it to the city clerk. I get it on public record. And when I speak, I hold it up to the camera and say, all you folks that are watching from home, this is at the library. So what my, you know, getting back to at the top, what do? I try to get all my facts into a publication. I give those publications to local officials. I meet with them where on their terms, whenever it is, in their office. It's unthreatening. We're not in public. And I build a rapport with them. So when they see Dan Titus walk in the room, they know I only go on facts.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how you build a little bit of rapport. Now, to the activism part, so getting back at the top of my conversation, so I set up these Citizens Action Committee. That was my goal. And I continued to do the publications and work with my city officials. And then what happened was Gary Galino of Grindall 61 YouTube channel contacted me and said that the city he lives in was doing a general plan update. So I had him over for a cup of coffee, and then I went into the general plan meetings, and I started throwing monkey wrenches in everything they were saying and doing. And that's on YouTube videos. You can watch us. And the planners try to backtrack, and it's it's comical. Like you said, you know, somebody like Hal or Tom or Dan Titus walks into the room. It's called anti. We learned this from Rosa Corey. You anti-Delphi a charrette, you know, that kind of. And what you do is you go in and basically you have, you already know what basically they're going to be talking about. You go in separately, like you don't know each other, and just raise your hand, stand up and ask a question, and somebody's videotaping. I cannot stress the importance of videotaping public meetings. And Gary Galino, he's got over 3,500 videos now.
Hmm.
A lot of them are video dossiers on elected officials over here. And, you know, we thought we were in a good shape for this next election. We could unseat them. We can't get rid of them. The general public, they just will not engage on this subject.
So they don't engage because they don't understand? It's just too big to, or it's just inevitable?
There's one thing we'll find out is happening. The counties are disappearing. The counties are selling their land, or not selling, but they're being annexed by cities, and cities are popping up everywhere. Well, what's that give you? Redundancy and more and more and more government and more public employees. The thing that's sinking California is the pension plans.
Is the what? Say that again?
Pension plans for public employees and teachers. Here's an example. Since we're moving toward this sustainability, as they call it. Our city has over 41 sustainability programs, and they won't share with me the costs on that. So that's another thing we're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
But what they're doing here is, and this is very, very important, you know, a school bond several years ago, $4 or $5 million was a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
So the local junior college over here, they passed, it sailed right through, $700 million. What's that for? All the infrastructure for brand new computers on a yearly basis, all the staff, the wiring, and guess what? Those playgrounds, they're not going to be playgrounds anymore. They're going to be covered with solar panels. We're buying that for them too.
Mm-hmm.
So these will force people with fixed incomes right off the suburbs. And I heard there's real estate investment trusts now where they go in and they'll buy a block of houses and knock them down and put in high density.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
Over here, the big push, people don't like high density housing in their neighborhoods. The city of Rancho Cucamonga, where I live, they tried to annex a bunch of county land, and the people started fighting it. And I chimed in on their group, and I go, well, you're really dealing with a symptom of a cause called sustainability. And I've got them up to speed on the cause of the problem. Because whenever I evaluate something, I go, what's the problem? What's the cause of the problem? And people misconstrue that all the time.
Yeah.
And then we do alternatives, choose an alternative, implement and follow up. That's basic decision making. But I'm so gratified. What I do is I can plug into an issue, whatever it is. And what isn't sustainability, you know, now? And once you know what it is, it's everywhere. I mean,
exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, listen,
it drives me nuts. Yep. Right.
Dan, we're just about the end of our time here. I want you to make sure, give out any of your contact information. I know you've got a lot of tools, a lot of things you've created. So tell us about that and how to get those and get your information.
Well, of course, yeah. The iAgenda21.com is the website. And then I highly recommend Dean Gocher at authorityresearch.com or org. I'm not sure what the extension is. Dean's done incredible work on the Hegelian dialect and Delphi technique and how to anti-Delphi.
Mm-hmm.
And you got Pat Wood over at technocracy.news.
Mm-hmm.
And then the young gentleman I work with, I can't stress this enough, Grindall 61 YouTube channel.
Spell that.
Grindall 61 all together.
Okay. Yeah, I've seen. And he's a fantastic young man who really just goes right up to him and on camera gives it to him. I've seen. He's got great videos there. Good stuff.
Yeah. Well, you know, Gary and I work very closely together. You know, it's. You know, I did the publications and the research and stuff, and when Gary started doing the videos, we started going to the local university down here, which had graduated their first 4-year degrees in sustainable development.
Mm-hmm.
And now they've graduated their first master's degree in sustainable development.
Yeah, geez.
And I, yeah, and I think I gave you a copy, Tom, of Higher Education's New Fundamental.
Yeah.
That's a great publication. But, I mean, yeah, the most important thing is, it only takes one person to stand up. And if you stand up on facts and get it on record, you'll start to build a case. Why? If you ever do decide to sue the city or something, your lawyer is going to love you for doing what you did. And it only takes one person to do that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, listen, I really appreciate it. And hang on, because what I'm going to do is we're going to open the lines for questions and hope they'll have a lot of questions for all of us, and we can help people move forward. CJ, do you want to?
Sure. Yep. If you want to go ahead and ask a question on your phone, just hit *6, and it'll put you into a question and answer queue, and we'll take each question first come, first serve, and try to keep your question short so we can answer as many as possible. So *6.
All right, so, yeah, if you want to ask a question, hit *6 right now. You'll get in the queue, and we'll take as many questions as we can. We're going to do that for about 30 minutes. And as CJ says, please don't make a speech, but ask something that's relevant to what we're talking about here. And, you know, if you've got questions about your local activism and how to do things, maybe you've tried some things, maybe some of the folks here on our panel will be able to give you some ideas on what to do with that. So, are we ready, CJ? Do we have some?
Yeah, we have some. Let me put our first one through to you.
Okay.
Okay, here we go.
All right. Welcome. What's your question? And who's it for?
Hey, Tom.
This
is Tricia Stahl in Virginia. And
hey.
Hi. So good to hear all of the commentators tonight, and I'm just so encouraged that they have the time to put into this education that's so needed. But I'm just wondering what either Hal or Dan would recommend in terms of reigniting the fire from those of us who have kind of taken a little hiatus from fighting for property rights to get that restarted again. And what's happening in Virginia, Tom? Thank you.
Okay. Hal, you want to start with that?
Actually, we started kicking off we just hosted an event in West Springfield last Friday night at a local restaurant to get a jump start. So I'd recommend using your local library meeting room or finding a place that doesn't cost much and, you know, have a dinner function or something and just invite people out. And this is how you get it. I'm going to be giving some presentations on the plastic bag issue in the area. That's going to generate interest in the bigger picture. So that's what I'd recommend. Show a video if you can't get a live speaker. And I know Tom's around a lot. I'm going to be down in Virginia the end of March. I think the last Friday I'll be speaking at Falls Church. I could be available sometime early in the week.
Yeah. There's new things happening that I think can help excite people who have been in the fight before. I'm finding things to be a little easier to explain these things. Used to they put it all in language that, you know, sounded so innocent and people didn't understand what it was. Now it's right in your face, and I'm finding that easier to get people involved. So, Dan, you got a comment?
Yeah, sure. You know, as activists, and you mentioned that you were involved and then you kind of backed off. I think that's part and parcel of, I see it happen with activists quite a bit. They take on too many issues. And if you don't know, you should be able to count your issues on one hand and better maybe two or three. What happens is a lot of people get involved in it and they burn out. They literally burn out or even get sick. So
yep.
My recommendation to that is to try to plug into existing organizations that you have in your area. You might be a conservative, Republican, maybe even the central committees. And get involved, but always know what I mean. My issue is sustainable development, and that's one issue, but it entails everything. So I've often asked, why did I land on this? But anyway, I hope that helps.
Yeah,
I think that's
you.
Excellent. Yeah, does that help?
Yes, thank you.
All right, thank you. Our next caller?
Hi, Tom. This is Donna Burns from the Ontario, Canada Landowners.
Hey, how are you? We are international on this call, by the way.
Yeah, Tom, I missed about the first 20 minutes of this, but
that's just me.
I'm just getting into this this thing with what we're promoting up here is the language, trying to show the public the language and how they're using specific words to trick them. And what's happening is the people, I've been pushing this soft law mechanism to trick the people, and where it's not really illegal what they're doing. They are voluntarily giving up their rights without realizing it until it's too late. And I think that seems to be, when you give them an example of the, if you ask them a squish question specifically, do you want to lose your right to vote? The automatic reply is no. But when they present it, well, we'll make it easy for you to vote, you know, and we'll bring in this electronic voting and alternative methods, you know, so you have convenience and everything. People fall for that. They get lured into that trap. And then behind the scenes, while they're going through this process, they are removing all these other avenues to the point that you eventually give up your right to vote, because then you get severely peeved off and you don't want to vote anymore.
What you're saying is that they are using language that people don't understand what the threat is, and it sounds kind of good at the moment, and they go along with it. Is that kind of it?
Yeah, exactly. Like the word we have up here is our municipalities are doing these official plans. This is what we call them up here. Nobody knows what an official plan is. But the official plan is all about removing your property rights.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about land use control.
Yeah.
So the counties will not say we're going to have a public meeting to inform you about how we're going to put land designations on your property. They say instead, we're going to have an official plan. Therefore, the public don't know what they're talking about. They don't come to these meetings. And therefore, and then it's considered implied consent because they didn't object to it at the time of the meetings or put in any form of objection. It's implied consent that you have agreed to their official plan. And then they go ahead with this policy. It's not even legislation. It's a soft law. They go ahead with this policy and start to implement it. Again, the people think, well, this must be law. We have to go by this.
One of the things that I'm talking with people about is before you can even start to fight back, you need to have a definition of what
right.
it is you're for. And, you know, we have the definition of property rights we've been using, and it's all over my website. And it's written by a state Supreme Court justice and so forth for these very purposes. But if you have that definition to begin with, and then I have a gentleman up in Michigan who is on he's actually the head of a planning commission. And after we had a conversation about property rights, and he took the definition, he took some things, and he went to the planning commission and he said, this plan has no language in it to protect private property. And the other members said, oh, yes, it does. He put it in front of him and said, show me where it is. And he went, oh, guess you're right. He says, here, this is it. And so I think that's one way to, you know, at the very beginning, to lay down what it is you're talking about here, not trust them to understand when you say property rights what you mean. Say, this is what we want. And, you know, be insistent on that.
That's really, yes, that's a very excellent point.
Yeah. What, Hal or Dan, anybody, any other comments?
No, but I think you're right. The language, it's good to clarify terms and what do they exactly mean by these. Like some, it might be different, of course, where you are than it would maybe here. But people hear something, it's, boy, if you read Towards a Sustainable America, it sounds pretty flowery. Everyone's going to have a job. Everybody's going to have a nice place to live. And so, well, who would be against that, you see? It's like the UN International Treaty on Human Rights. You know, you have a right to a vacation. Yeah, but look down the chapter, you know, two pages below that. It says, but unless you oppose the, unless there's a law against it, you can't do it, you know? And who's promising the vacation? You know, is it the free market system? Now, who's giving you the right? So, yeah. So, and I think the idea, too, is that if they're doing something that's violation of the Constitution, and whether it be the U.S. Constitution or another country, even if you got majority rule, if 99% of the people agree, that doesn't mean you can just do it. You know, like you can't say, I can't buy plastic bags from a guy in the Midwest and use them in my store. And then you force me to charge people? You're forcing me to sell a product? That doesn't sound like what our founding fathers had in mind when they gave us the Constitution. And if you take that approach, then it's, you know, you're looking at it from a different angle. You know, oh, we don't want to kill the whales in Indonesia. No, you're taking our freedoms away. So it becomes a freedom issue, and that might get more sympathy, you know, get more people interested.
And I just, if I can just chime in here real quick, Ontario, Canada, your electric rates went through the roof up there, right?
Yes,
over
they
the
did.
Last few years.
Yeah.
Okay, and then, you know, Hydro One, completely broke, subsidized by the government, tried to buy all of the power companies in the northwest of the United States and usher in the Paris Accord. And just last 2 weeks, the way it went is the energy commissions of the different states, Oregon, Washington, Idaho, and Montana, they all had to agree to this thing, and if one fell out, it would cave. Well, we just got this ruling. Washington said no to this. This would have taken down hydro dams on the Columbia River. This would have been a wholesale takeover of private property through energy and water. And that's how you encumber private property, through energy and water,
yep.
and the things that you need to manage and improve your property.
You're right. You're right. I'm a retired hydro employee. Mm-hmm. And when I was working, Maurice Strong, who you all know,
oh, yes.
Was our CEO for a period of time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, when it was the old Ontario Hydro, he broke down the old Ontario Hydro and split it up. But, yeah.
Yeah. Well, listen, I hope that helped. We want to move
yes,
on.
Yes, it's very good information.
But,
thank you.
Good. All right. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thanks for being on. Next caller.
Hello. I'm calling from North Dakota. It's winter here. I would like to know that two little things. Grindahl on YouTube. How did you spell that, you said? And the second thing, I'd like a little bit more information on the changing the weather you mentioned before about seeding with
right.
metals or something.
Dan, that's you.
Right. Yeah, that's Grindahl, Grindahll 61, and that's a YouTube channel, so just go to YouTube and type that in. And then you can go to my website, iagenda21.com, and click on geoengineering for an overview on geoengineering.
Geoengineering.
Did you get that spelling of the Grindahl? Did you get that spelling?
I just about did, but my pen didn't want to work very
Uh-oh.
Well.
Give it to me again, Dan. I heard a little frustration in there.
Thank you.
Grindahll 61.
61. Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you.
Sure.
Next caller.
Oh, hello. Thank you for your service. My name is Mary Beth. I'm calling from New York. I'm not an activist, but I'm interested in becoming one. I know that 61 YouTube guy, he's great. He did one on the property maintenance code. I went to New York State property maintenance code, and I saw that every state in the nation has the title International Property Maintenance Code. And a property maintenance officer can go into your house without a warrant. That was so alarming to me. But my question to you is any of this reversible? Like, what is reversible? Once they take the money, the city takes the money, they're goners, right?
This is a real problem. Is the grant money, because they have these strings attached in there, and if you aren't compliant. HUD in the last few years has figured out that communities didn't fully comply, they can file a lawsuit and they basically control your community instead of your elected officials. Doesn't matter if you got good people there and want to do what you want them to do, they can't because their hands are tied because they took these grants. Number one is to tell them, don't take the grants. But, that's easier said than done, and most of them already have, so you're right.
Yeah.
So how
can an association, the American Planning Association, who is responsible, I think, for having every state in the nation have the title International Property Maintenance Code, like we're not state governments anymore. How could they get away with that? They're an association.
Well, they're taking the grant money, and the communities are bringing them in.
They're contracted as well by the federal government. So.
Right, Yeah.
And also, maybe, is there a way to go after the NGOs through legislature to give them less power?
Well, let me tell you this. I'm glad you asked that, because every one of those groups is a 501c3, and
right.
that means they're a private organization. They have absolutely no power unless your elected officials give it to them. But they come in there and surround them. The first thing we do when we elect a city councilman or county commissioner or a mayor or a governor is we send them off to the National Association, for the National Governors Association
mm-hmm.
or the mayor's conference or city councilman. And who's speaking to them there? The same NGOs. And they give them sample legislation. And then when they come home, they're met with representatives of the same groups, and they're saying, did you get the sample legislation? Hey, we've got it all right here in a box for you. Got the money for you, too.
Mm-hmm.
There
mm-hmm.
it is. And the only reason these guys have any power at all is because your elected officials give it to them. And one of the things you can do, every one of those organizations is national. Even though your county commissioners are sitting there saying, this is all local, 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 it's all,
yeah.
you can look, I can show you Dubai 2050 and Jamaica 2050, and it'll look exactly like Heartland 2050 out of Nebraska. So, mm-hmm. you know, this is, you know, what they're doing. And you can, your city councilman can throw them out and say, I'm not going to listen to you. They don't have to. They are not government organizations. By the way, neither are the National Governors Association, the Mayor's Conference, or those. They're all 501c3s, too. So
mm-hmm.
that it's all by, you know, they've just, it's smoke and mirrors of what they've created. And it ain't government.
Okay, and one other thing. You really are terrific, and you're brave, and you're inspiring. And going after the young people, I think, is like the way to go, right? Influence the influencers.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, you've given me good information. Thank you.
All right. Thank
I would just like to chime in real quick.
Sure.
We have a report. It's by the on our you can download this. It's the United States Senate Committee on Environment and Public Works. It was a minority staff report from 2014,
mm-hmm.
and it's titled The Chain of Environmental Command. It walks you through the corruption of 501c3 and 501c4s and the extreme environmentalists. Great report.
Okay. Also, the community newspapers, they're a great resource too, don't you think? Like, to just put little ads in the community newspapers, the ones that are left?
Yeah, I recommend
that. Articles.
I won't even run ads. Just run public service announcements, like if you're having an event, or just write a letter to the editor. And also, stop in to get to know the person, get to know one of those reporters, get to know
right.
maybe some of these people, they don't even have reporters, you know, because they're just a, you know, small operation, but they'll run an article that you send them. And before
right.
you know it, you might be a contributing editor or columnist.
Well, actually, I used to send my own little ads talking about the UN and stuff, and I don't know how many people.
Whereabouts in New York are you?
Pardon?
Whereabouts in New York are you?
In Queens and Rockaway Beach.
Oh, okay. I've got some friends. If you want, get a hold of the American Policy Center, and we can put you in touch with people in Queens that are working on these things.
Okay, I'm on that mailing
yeah.
list. All right, I will do. I'll get back in touch with you.
Yeah, write me a note, and I'll pass it on to Hal, and he'll get to you.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, is this TomDeWeese.com?
Yeah.
Tom?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All righty. Thanks
All
again.
Right. Thank you. Uh-huh.
Bye-bye.
Next caller.
Hello, this is Al in Alabama,
yeah.
and appreciate what y'all are doing so much. I want to ask a question about, there's some property I'm considering buying, and it says the land is classified as wetlands, and before building, a delineation report will need to be submitted to the Army Corps of Engineers. Is this Agenda 21 as well?
I would definitely be very concerned about Army Corps of Engineers because they're up to their eyeballs in it. So I'd be very careful about it.
What's amazing
about
it
is that is there a conservation easement involved? Be very careful with that purchase.
I don't know about that. It's just saying it's some acreage, and it says this is an advertisement online. So the delineation report will need to be submitted because the land is classified as wetlands.
Yeah. Now, you might find, as Dan's bringing up, you might find you have to put a conservation easement on it, or maybe it's already there, or there are other restrictions to use it because it's a wetland. Basically, it's a wetland. You're not allowed to build on it anyway, so you're going to be very restricted to what you can use that property for. So you want to make sure you've checked all that out before you would purchase it.
There's a lot of harm in the world. People who was that family? They were from Eastern Europe. They actually went to the Army Corps of Engineers. They gave them the green light, and
okay.
they actually removed debris. And by removing this debris that's been there forever, the water was flowing, and he ended up putting him in jail. And they fined him out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think he had an auto body shop or something like that.
Yeah.
And this would have been before, this would be back in the 90s, I think.
His name is Posgay. Yeah. And he cleaned up trash out of a place. He made it better. It had been it was an illegal dump, and he cleaned it up. But because it had been a dump for a long time, it had begun to block water, which created wetlands there. It was artificial wetlands. But then they accused him of destroying a wetlands when he cleaned up the trash, because the water then flowed the way it was supposed to.
But I guess my question is, if you own private property, how can anybody tell you that you can't build on it?
Well, that's
well, because in essence, you don't own it anymore. Between property taxes and all the regulations, I mean, some states you can't chop a tree down. But California is a whole lot worse. But you know, they don't want you to chop trees down. Vermont's like that. Something called Act 250, which went into effect, I think, in the 70s, and Agenda 21 is making it more difficult. And then when there's forest fires or floods, they blame it on climate change when it's actually the land use policies that are supposed to be environmental friendly and causing the problem.
But this is the reason we're fighting this battle, exactly the question you just asked, because you're absolutely right. And, you know, the way this country was built was on private property, and your property was yours. You had the right to defend it. You had the right to do with it as you wanted, as long as you weren't hurting your next-door neighbor's, you know, ability to use his property the same way. And
You couldn't divert the river and make all the water flow over to him and erode his land, for instance.
Sure, exactly, yeah.
That's only common courtesy.
Yeah, it's called being neighbors. But now they create these one-size-fits-all policies where basically it's I can't, you can't, and we can't is the rule of it all, and that's all you can do. So
there's a video that was done by a country and western band. It's called Big Park. It came out in the early 90s. It's humorous, but it also talks about how it's about Terry Kennedy, I think, is the guy who died. I actually met him in California. That might be a way to kind of – it's a humorous way to introduce you know, this is what's happening. I think you should check it out. I have it up, and as other people have, it's called Big Park. You think they'll probably enjoy it. But at the end of it, Terry gives a little speech and talks about what's really happening and what needs to be done. So,
all right. I hope that helps a little bit, give you a little caution.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Our next caller.
Hi. Yeah, I have a question just and a comment. This is Sarah. I live in Sacramento.
Hey, Sarah.
Hi there. This is such an amazing program I've been listening to. I actually learned things that I thought I knew. I think I'm pretty good on this, but man, I feel like a beginner. And Tom, are you going to have this taped and transcribed so we can, or posted really quick?
It's being recorded. It's being recorded. Yeah.
Please transcribe for those. You know,
you
it is amazing. And I just had one question. There's tons, but anyway, how does one? We have this housing thing here and everywhere, you know. And all of a sudden, I learned, I didn't know this, that there are apartments apparently, that we have an abundance of apartments that have been built that nobody's living in. We also have about 1,200 houses here in Sacramento that have been condemned as unlivable, but I thought, well, why are there but anyway, we have a homeless problem like everybody else, and everybody's fighting about where to put these poor people that don't have homes. And if there's a housing surplus, where does one find, I mean, what department would I go to find out the number of apartments, vacant apartments, in the city of Sacramento, or any city, my town, USA, to find out the number of vacant apartments that are up there and available? What's the department
there's
that handles that?
Apartment associations, and I think there's a California Apartment Association that generates statistics on those type of things.
Okay. Wait a minute. What's it again now, the Apartment Association?
Apartment Associations. Google that or search that on the internet, and I've seen those before.
Okay, great, because that's wouldn't serve me. But it turns out we have 30,000 apartments that are standing vacant. And also, somebody's brought up another question. I've been hearing that there are small cities being built up in the northern part of the state that nobody, sort of like the ghost cities of China. Do you know any information about that? Have any?
I haven't heard on that one.
Okay.
But I'm aware of the surplus of apartments for sure.
Okay. Oh, I'll check it. Hey, listen, thank you very, very much. This has been an amazing program. So.
Thank you, Sarah. Sarah, by the way, is a very effective journalist and researcher, so we talk often.
Once upon a time.
Yes, you are.
Trying again.
All right. Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you.
What's interesting up in northern Maine in Arista County and Washington County, you see the depopulation program. And I have a friend up there, Roger Eck, who's a Vietnam, he was a helicopter pilot in Vietnam. He said that the projection, they made a certain projection of population decrease. He said they're way ahead of it in Arista County. There used to be 100,000 people, and we're talking about a county the size of the state of Connecticut. We're talking about a pretty big county, and it's down to 70,000 if you drive up there. And I love going up, up there in late February, early March. You'll see towns with the stores, or half the stores are boarded up. So there, you know, they're losing population. But if you go to Boston, and I live right in the city, there's an area by Fenway Park where the Red Sox play that was mostly brownstones, and now it looks like mini Manhattan. You've seen these, you know, 25-story buildings. They'll tear down a little gas station, and next thing you know, there's a big high-rise going there. And I think if there's empty apartments, if it's not market-driven, then if it's just HUD coming in and saying, well, we're going to guarantee the developer X amount of dollars, so they're going to build these units, and we're going to guarantee you 50% occupancy for HUD, Section 8 housing, but then you're going to have a problem. Even Section 8, you can't afford to live in certain neighborhoods, even if they're going to subsidize the rent, you still can't afford the cost of living there, so you're not going to go there, and then you have empty apartments, and then the prices have to go down, and just anytime the government gets involved, it's like the late Tom Anderson used to say, it's like cockroaches. It's not what they steal, it's what they fall into and mess up. So, you know, government gets involved at local level, at the state level, and that's what generates, disallocations in the marketplace, to use an economic term I learned in high school or college. And this is what happens. And Agenda 21 is a big part of that.
Absolutely.
You know, was it Frederick Hayek in his Road to Serfdom? He said, mankind's fatal conceit is the idea that you can plan a dynamic economy successfully.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
Our next caller, are you on?
Yes, hello. My name is Ed Cashmark, and I'm calling from Minneapolis, Minnesota, otherwise known as the California of the Midwest.
I'm going to be there in a few months.
It is quite frightening. It's quite frightening what we're seeing going on here. Anyway, I have just a quick request and a question. My request is, like a few other people here have said, it would be great if we could get some of the links that people are mentioning on the show for some of the Grindall and the I agenda and all that. If we can just get as many links as possible in an email, would be great so we can go to these places.
I'll take care of that. Yeah.
Yeah. Secondly, my question is this. You know, if we want to solve a problem, obviously what you guys are doing is great, just great. But if we really want to solve the problem, what we have to do is we have to go to the source of the problem. And the source of the problem is the schools. These schools, both elementary, middle school, high school, colleges, universities, grad schools, from zero to whatever, are just littered with liberal professors who are spewing socialist, communist, Agenda 21, green this, green that, green everything else, stuff.
Yeah.
And these kids are coming out just as androids, and they can't think, they can barely speak, they can't reason, they can't defend an argument. And just a quick story, my niece was talking about evolution over Christmas holiday. And I got in a little argument with her. It took me 20 seconds to debunk evolution. And she sat there stunned. She had no idea what to say. She's a freshman in college. So my question is, when or if is it going to happen where conservatives finally start to turn liberalism around in these schools and start to gain back some momentum and some control of these schools? Because right now it's just an indoctrination center from beginning to end.
Can I take that question?
Yeah, let me just say, I completely agree with you. And even though I work now focusing on property rights as a main center of what I do, I believe that the education issue is the most important issue that we deal with. Go ahead, Hal.
Yes.
Yeah, well, of course, I think it's Chapter 36 of the Agenda 21 deals with education, in other words, indoctrination into turning everybody into globalists and greenies. And so that curriculum has been adopted in schools all over the country, mainly government-controlled public schools. So I'm a big advocate of homeschooling. Get your child out, or your grandchild out of there as soon as possible. Don't put them in that environment. There's wonderful resources. There's homeschool. There's online curriculum. It's a lot easier than it was 15 to 20 years ago. There's a lot of homeschool show conventions. You probably have some right in Minneapolis or Minnesota. There's a lot of support. We probably won't be capturing the public. Thing with most government local schools. They're hard leftist, and now they're actively recruiting your child to be a homosexual, a transgender. So you really don't want to put your child in there. We have a great...
Oh, you know what? I never would if I had children.
Yeah.
I don't even have kids, and I'm more worried about this stuff than my friends who have
well,
kids.
Well, you know what? You're
very aware.
You can still be... You can volunteer your time. We have on our website, campconstitution.net, we have the Samuel Blumenfeld Archives, which Sam was a pioneer in the homeschool movement, and we have I inherited his library. We created this great free resource, and you can teach people how to read free of charge. We may monetize one little thing, a buck, but we haven't done that yet. You could teach them basic arithmetic. You can it has audios and videos. And it kind of goes into the problems and how to solve them, how to tutor, and many other things. So just the Blumenfeld Archives right through our website, and it's just a great resource. So and Sam was a critic of education, but he always had this is the solution. So that's the way to go. And today, you know, they just closed there's a college in Vermont that's closing down. It's the Green Mountain College. Isn't that a shame? It's a far-left school, but it's closing down.
It is closing down.
Yeah,
what are they going to do with their oxen herd?
Well, I hope they're going to donate it to Camp Constitution, and we can start a year-round program up there.
Have
I don't
an
know.
Ox roast. Yeah. Okay. Hey, Leslie, got to move on. I got two more callers.
Thanks for your help.
I hope that helps. Thank you. Thanks for the call. Next caller.
Yes, this is Ted, New Mexico.
Hi, Ted.
What was the name of that Senate report on the chain of NGO command or something like that?
It's called the Chain of Environmental Command.
Environmental Command, okay.
You should Google that and take it. It'll take you to the Senate for the
chain
report, or you can go to my... Right.
So you can just look it up on the Internet without any having to go to the Senate reports or anything?
Yeah, well, you can type that into Google. It'll take you to the PDF. I'm sure you'll find it. If not, it's at my website, iagenda21.com. And there's another publication by the same Senate committee called Critical Thinking on Climate Change.
Climate change, okay. Just read an article. They're changing the approach to people now. It's going to become an emotional issue instead of a factual one because people are swayed by emotions. This is how they're going to change.
Oh, yeah, that's welcome to relative California, where everything
well,
changes.
All over. excellent presentation. Thank you very much.
Yeah, our issue is emotional, too. We will deal with facts. We know the left uses emotion and silly logic and slogans. But it's emotional, too, when your family's run off the land or your business is closed down and you have to move out of a community. You've lived there all your life or four or five generations. So it's emotional on our end, too. Taking away people's freedoms and destroying the American way of life is definitely an emotional issue here for us.
Absolutely.
Their main goal on that is to get everybody to accept climate change, and then they can give you the cure.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate it. Next caller.
Yes, this is Bill from Maryland. And I've been fighting a property rights issue in a river here in central Maryland for like 3 years. And we had a politician from one of the counties that has actually been helping us. He suggested that we create a political action committee and name it whatever we want to call it, property rights for this particular river, whatever. And he said, raise money and then go visit the guilty politicians, the county commissioners that are supporting taking these property rights away, and say that we're going to devote this $100,000 that we raised to defeating you at the next election. I just wanted to see what you thought about that idea.
I like it. What do you guys think?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I think it's a good idea, but it doesn't work in a one-party state over here. We, we've got rhinos over here that, it's tough being here, like I said.
But the main thing is making sure these guys have got to feel some pain. There's consequences for their actions. And that's the one thing we rarely do. Even if they did something really bad and you filed a lawsuit against them, they did something on your property or whatever, and you won the suit, they're not the ones that are going to pay a fine.
The taxpayers. Yeah.
And so, one of the things that maybe we should push for in the legislatures is some kind of, legislation that says if, for example, you filed a lawsuit and won, that they are individually responsible for it and begin to feel the pain of it. It's what a great deal they've got. They can do whatever they want to you and have no consequences for it. And that's, of course, getting them out of office is the biggest consequence you can give them. But, that's the problem.
Well, I think your solution for attorney network is a good one. But also, California, we need a lobbyist kind of dedicated for this up in Sacramento. California is a long state. Mm-hmm. We can't get there. It's kind of like, Brussels. You're in Scotland. I think those two things would help tremendously.
Yeah.
We've tried PACs over here. We've got lawsuits going. They just go forever.
Yeah, I know. All righty.
So,
does that help any at all? No, I think it's a great idea. I think it's a great idea that anything that you organize like that and stand in front of them and say, cross that line, and this is what you're going to face. And that does give them pause in a lot of places, maybe not California, but in a lot of places it does. And I'm for it in any way we can do it.
Well, we established a Taxpayers Association, which became well-known very quickly because we were funneling a lot. They picked up a lot of my research on this particular issue. And, again, they started pushing it around. And you could plug in. You could definitely start a PAC, but maybe a Taxpayers Association, and write articles to gain some goodwill in the community, and you become the opinion leader in the area.
Mm-hmm.
Just use our articles and things. Heck, all my stuff, you can download it for free.
Mm-hmm.
Put it out.
All right. Well, listen, we got to move on. I think we got two more callers, and if we can do this quickly, because I don't want to go over too much, but can we have our next caller?
Yeah, I was just wondering if scenic byways are a part of Agenda 21 and how much of a problem they are, if they are.
Yeah, the what they do, the visioning and all that sort of thing, that is a means to lock away land. That's a tool for that purpose, and we had a person up in Maine that we worked with, who had a big piece of property there and wanted to do something with her property, wanted to put some stuff on it. And people next door and around it were saying, that's ruining my view shed. In other words, their view of her property. And so she couldn't do anything because that would hurt their view shed. And so these are the kind of excuses that they use for that kind of thing. And visioning and all that is part of that way of controlling the land. Anybody else got a thought on that?
That was Camp Davis, right, Tom?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, I think I must have passed out about 10,000 copies of that DVD back. That's all I had initially. When this thing broke, and it was very good. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I guess when you buy a piece of property, in fact, in New Hampshire, there's one fellow that has a farm, and people are buying lots around him, and they're saying, oh, we don't want to live near a farm. We don't want to smell the animals. So he's got a big old sign that says, this is a farm. Animals do stuff that people usually do behind closed doors. This is what a farm, you don't like it, too bad. And so he's had some success with fighting it, but that's what happens when you get these urban people moving in, and they want to have their Starbucks, and they don't want to have the smell of cow manure. Well, that's country living. Get used to it, So you're right; that does happen.
Yeah.
It's like
over here, one thing that's showing up in the climate action plan is light pollution. So that if you have a light on in your premises and it crosses the guy's fence. That's another thing they're doing. Like,
you can't see the Milky Way in Boston, so turn off all your lights.
Right.
Well, you won't have that problem, Dan, much longer because you won't have any lights at night. So,
there we go. So that'll solve that problem.
We'll solve that problem. I love light pollution. That's my favorite pollution. So, does that help?
Well, you ever see a picture of satellites of the world, and you'll see at night, and you'll see that parts of Africa are still pretty dark. And the rest of the Western world where the standard of living is pretty good is lit up, and that's right there is what's going to happen when the lights go out.
They call that North Korea, I think.
North Korea, that's right. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
There you go. I think our last caller, I believe. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Candace, and I'm from Minneapolis, also. I wanted to touch base just a little bit. First of all, Tom, we're looking so much forward to having you visit us.
Thank you.
We're trying to put together a really good group of folks and in several different locations so that hopefully we'll get a lot of word out in a lot of places.
I think
places.
We got four so far, I think, talks up in...
That sounds about right. I know of three off the top of my head. So.
Added another one yesterday, I think it was. So, I'm looking forward to being up there. And you guys have got major problems, so maybe we can help get something going.
We do, but we also have some good news out of this crazy neck of the woods in that we have had some enlightened folks in various places step up and basically use your materials to change incrementally in small towns how things are being done.
Fantastic.
The materials work, and we have some pretty stubborn people who used to hang out in my basement, and we put all these plans together. And we did turn city council from ardent left to majority now Republican. Well, not Republican per se. They're more libertarian. But the point is we were able to, small group of people, there were probably 15, 20 max, change the way the city looked at things.
Fantastic.
Taking everybody in leadership in the city out, but, those are the things that happen. And pretty quick, you know, people begin to realize that, hey, we can't quite get away with what we used to.
There you go. That, boy, you are the perfect summation for this whole call. Thank you.
I was kind of debating whether to even pitch in.
No, that's fantastic.
Yeah,
we're
having a lot of fun up here, and we're making a difference.
Fantastic.
That's great.
Fantastic. All right. Well, thank you. Appreciate that. And I get, you know, we've gone a little over, but I think we've had some great discussion here. Hal and Dan, I so much thank you for not only being here, but everything that you're doing. I love working with you guys. We got a lot coming up, I think, that we're going to be able to work together on. And we're going to make some hay this year on this stuff. And so I appreciate you. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having us on, Tom.
Sure. And, yeah, we'll get some of this information out to people, these links and stuff that Dan and Hal have been giving you. I want to give you another link, something that, you know, what we have to do is communicate as activists, getting our information out. We've shared things tonight. A whole lot of folks around the country have stories to tell, fights they've been involved in. Sometimes it's bad stuff. Don't do this because we lost, you know, had our heads cut off on it, or here's a great thing that we did, whatever. I want to share that information, and there is something, a place for us all to talk, to communicate with each other, to share these things. My friend Pat Wood has put together this website called localactivist.org. Local activist, singular, localactivist.org. We have a Property Rights Network page on there. It's set up a lot like Facebook, but it is very carefully controlled so that you can talk openly, share ideas, don't worry about being trolled, things like that. I suggest you go on there, sign up for it. If you've got a local community or a local organization, put your own page on there and be able to talk with people and so forth. So go to localactivist.org. We have created a whole lot of tools for you to use. I've got my new book, Sustainable, The War on Free Enterprise, Private Property, and Individuals. It goes through all the stuff we've been talking about. All of that is available. You'll see all of our articles, an archive of articles and so forth, at our website, americanpolicy.org. So go to those sites and participate there. And this call has been recorded, and we will be sending it out to our email list here and within this week. And if you're not on that list, you can sign up for that at americanpolicy.org. And also visit Hal and Dan's sites, and I will include, as I said, on this email we send it out, those links that they're giving you. And we're building a network to fight back. That is, I want to win. That is why we are fighting. And that's what we're going to do. So I appreciate it, and enjoy the rest of your evening, and get ready for a good, busy week. We're going to fight for property rights and fight against Agenda 21 and for freedom. So God bless everybody.
Amen.
Thank you.
Good night.